Hello, friends. Let me welcome you to HAL Radio.
How to be a man. Hal Jackson's Washington Bears was a good example of young men with positive goals, self-esteem, and drive. Today, we'll be talking about the exciting history of Hal Jackson's Washington Bears of 1943. In those days, there was not a black professional basketball league like baseball's Negro Leagues, but independent African-American teams played one another on a nationwide barnstorming circuit. Most teams were comprised of inner-city working men who would play games once or twice a week. The class of the circuit was the New York Renaissance, a.k.a. Harlem Rens, at least until D.C. entered the picture. The Bears ultimately ended the 1943 season undefeated. Tournament chairman Leo Fisher described the Bears' feat like this in the 1942-43 Converse Basketball Yearbook. Winning the world's title, the Washington team performed the feat that no previous winner has recorded. They finished the 1943 season with a perfect record, having won every one of their 41 starts. This is the first time since the turn of the century that a professional basketball team has enjoyed a season without a single defeat. The city's first pro basketball champions were the undefeated Hal Jackson Washington Bears of 1943, an independent, all-black team that won that March the annual World Professional Basketball Tournament played by the top 12 pro teams of the year. The winners were acknowledged as world champions. Team owner Hal Jackson recalled that we returned to a hero's welcome. A parade down Pennsylvania Avenue led to the White House, where President Franklin Roosevelt, in a wheelchair, presented a certificate before a big dinner. The Bears were independent only because the pro leagues excluded black teams and players, but they defeated all comers, white professionals and amateurs alike, even the Norfolk Naval team that included Red Auerbach. After 70 years, this team should be remembered for winning its games on the court and for winning its fight against the rampant racial discrimination of its times. Today, we welcome Dr. Cora Lee Farley, president of the Friends of Southwest DC.
Hello, I'm Skeeter Black, and I am the host of the Hal Jackson Legacy Project internet radio show, How to Be a Man. I am joined by Ernest Egungba. He is a 14-year-old aspiring broadcaster, and he will be conducting an interview today with Ms. Dr. Cora Lee Farley.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Ernest?
Hello, my name is Ernest, and I am on the phone with Dr. Cora Lee Farley. That's with the Friends of Southwest. How are you today, Ms. Farley?
Thank you.
First question I want to ask you today is, how did you become involved with your current organization, Friends of Southwest DC?
How did I become involved with it? In 1998, I was on the board of River Park Friends, and one of the members of the board suggested that we ought to do something for the neighborhood. So it was suggested that we could find out if there was a need for this kind of organization in Southwest. So I was asked to be chair of a feasibility committee, which had about four or five members at the time.
Okay.
That was in 1998.
All right. Another question. What exactly made you want to sponsor Hal Jackson's How to Be a Man?
I didn't hear your question. What exactly made us what?
I said, what exactly made you want to sponsor Hal Jackson's How to Be a Man?
Oh, that's many years later. Since we organized and have been functioning for 15 years since we started, we've been taking applications from different groups. It sounded like an interesting application to us, that it seemed that there was a need for this kind of education for young people to get knowledgeable about broadcasting and about interviewing, about get some experience in these skills and information.
Okay. Why did you think this project, How to Be a Man, would be helpful to young men in Southwest?
Well, I think for the same reason. It seemed interesting, relevant for young men in Southwest to become involved. And as long as your organization head was able to recruit people and select people, we thought it would be useful to Southwest as well as the participants.
Okay. Is there any advice you have for Hal Jackson's How to Be a Man radio station?
Yeah, I guess respect yourself. Respect people that you work and talk with, meet on the street, meet in the store. Respect for each other. How to Be a Man is, I guess, taking responsibility for yourself as a citizen of Southwest and of the U.S., of D.C. and the U.S. I mean, looking out for others and ensuring that you help other groups, other people, ensuring that you're knowledgeable about what's going on in the city and vote, encourage others to register to vote when you're eligible, and just kind of watch your own reputation, because in order to be a man and to function in society, you need really to have a good reputation. And you need people who recognize you for that. People who can give you references when you need them.
Okay. Do you have any children?
No.
Oh, okay. Are you involved in any other programs that provide support to Southwest?
Well, I donate to the SWANA programs, the Southwest Neighborhood Assembly.
Okay.
Other programs in Southwest.
What are some examples of things that your association does, like for other organizations in Southwest?
What are examples of what Friends of Southwest does?
Yeah, examples of, you know, other things that they do for organizations.
We do not run projects ourselves or programs. We bundle the donations that we get and make grants to other organizations. Our programs are in three, our missions are in three areas: community development, and under that category, we funded about seven other organizations in Southwest. Educational is a second mission, and we funded about 10, let me count. Just 16 different organizations in Southwest that does programs in educational area. And our third mission is charitable, and we funded 4 programs there over the years since we started making grants, which was 1999.
Okay. Are there any other programs that we should talk to? Any other of your programs that we should talk to?
Places that we have funded?
Yes.
Well, perhaps. Well, look on our website. It might give you some ideas. But perhaps Emma U.S., who we funded, and she takes groups. She started out with educational trips to D.C., to the mall, to the Smithsonian museums and such, educational trips. Now, in the past few years, she's been taking groups, youth, and a couple of chaperones to Philadelphia to tell them the history of the country in Philadelphia. We recently funded the Girl Scouts troop here in Southwest also. We have supported several of the SWANA, the Southwest Neighborhood Assembly programs, the scholarship program, the tech support, and things like that. And I think you're already interviewing Paul Taylor, who puts on the Southwest Community Day every year to welcome people back to the Southwest, people who grew up here or lived here formerly and come back to the Southwest.
Okay.
Those are a few suggestions.
Okay. What is your actual web address?
My actually what?
Your
website. What's your website?
What?
Your website. That we can go
into. FriendsSWDC.org.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Ms. Farley.
Okay. You're welcome.
And,
good luck.
Thank you so much. Say thank you, Ernest.
Thank you, Ms. Farley.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Hello, my name is Ernest, and I am on the phone with Dr. Coralie Farley. That's with the Friends of Southwest. My first question today is, how did you become involved with your current organization, Friends of Southwest, D.C.?
Yeah. In 1998, I was on the board of River Park Mutual Homes, a residential cooperative in Southwest. And one of our other board members who had served in Africa as a contractor for USAID said, well, we ought to be doing here in Southwest some of the things that he was doing in Africa, that is, helping organizations that benefit the neighborhoods in which they existed. So the president of River Park at the time asked me to be chair of a feasibility committee to see if this was a good idea, see if we could evolve it into a living organization. So with three other people, we formed this feasibility committee and then proceeded to study what we might do and how it should be done. We talked about various options that we would not be we would not run programs ourselves, but we would be a grant making organization and give grant awards to other organizations in Southwest that were doing various activities to help Southwest. Over a 6 month period or so, we discussed this. We decided that we would not impact the co-op fees at River Park. We would be a totally separate organization. We would reserve the right to refuse any donations that we couldn't get actual funding from them. Things like actual residential units or paintings or historic books, we could reject those, and we do, because we would first have to sell them in order to get proceeds so we could make grants. So we decided not to raise money that way, which we still do. We raise money from private donations in the community. So we put together, we worked with an attorney, had a couple of meetings with an attorney to figure out how to do this. We developed our articles of incorporation and bylaws and submitted our proposal to the International Revenue Service in August of 1998. And when it was finally recognized, it was backdated to that date that we were officially organized. So we've been recognized as, initially it was called Friends, I'm sorry, it was initially called River Park Friends. After we were functioning for a few years, we recognized that people confused whether we were just supporting River Park, the co-op. So we wanted to clarify, no, that we were functioning to help the whole Southwest neighborhood. So in 2010, we polled our donors and gave them two or three options for a name change. And then we came up with the name Friends of Southwest DC. We're hoping by that change, and since 2010, we have become more recognized as doing work in the entire Southwest DC neighborhood.
Okay. How did the Friends of Southwest DC evolve after you joined?
Yeah. Well, we did have that name change in 2010. In the very beginning, we started with only one grant. And then, I guess I neglected to say, in our the process of getting formed, we decided we'd focus on three missions. That is, community development, or educational projects, and charitable projects. I believe I said we decided not to do programs ourselves, but we would fund other 501c3 organizations in Southwest that do conduct projects and programs in those three areas. So since we formed, we have funded about 30 organizations, I think, about 10 under community development, about 20 under educational, and two or three under charitable. We mostly fund programs and projects that are educational. That's the way it's evolved. But our mission includes the other two as well, the community development and charitable, where we haven't had as many applications recently.
Okay. What exactly have you learned in your experience with the Friends of Southwest DC so far?
Yeah, that's a good question. We learned that it does take a lot of work to run this kind of organization. The visibility is critical. We're still not sure we have it right because we write articles in the Southwester. We have an annual meeting. We hope donors will come, but I think we haven't hit yet on the correct, on the most relevant time for the donors to come to our annual meeting to listen to what our grantees have accomplished with our awards. So we've learned that visibility is important. We have those meetings. We have a couple of fundraisers where we have picked up some new people along the way, more recently, and that's accomplishing what I want to. We enlarged the board, or we have a board of 9 people now. We started out with 7, I believe. But I want to make certain that the board is representative of the entire Southwest. And our original board was River Park members, because that's where we started. But because of to try to clarify that it wasn't just a River Park-focused activity, we spread out and recruited board members from broader areas in Southwest. What else have we learned? Well, some funding appeals work better than others. I think the matching ones have been working quite well. And I do believe the annual meetings work when we can get donors to come and pay attention. Of course, it's been also a way that members of that, of the different organizations that we funded, learn about each other and learn about each other's needs. And that's been one important outcome, I think, of our annual meetings.
Okay. What are goals you have for the Friends of Southwest DC moving forward?
I'm sorry, what?
I said, what are goals you have for the Friends of Southwest DC?
Well, to keep going, that is, hopefully our grantees will think that we're doing something useful for the Southwest neighborhood. Hopefully our grantees will keep applying, and we'll locate even new organizations that we didn't know about. This year, last year, we funded the Girl Scouts troop, which we didn't know about, and we've funded them once and hope that they will come back with additional applications. We've lost two or three people that used to apply regularly, and we're not sure why, but I hope that they're finding better sources of money rather than ours. Which our grants are really not very sizable. Okay. So, yeah, what we'd like to do is, of course, have a larger, more successful fundraising effort. We do it twice a year now, both with matching amounts. And just moving on to making it more available, more attractive to 501c3 organizations in Southwest, more visible to them as well as to the donors.
Okay. Has there been anyone you have rejected for funding, and why is that?
Yes, we did reject two, I believe, and that's two out of many applications. One, because it didn't quite meet our mission definition. It was a church group, and we had decided not to fund religious activities, but to stick with nonprofits that worked with community, more focused than the religious group would. And we didn't fund a second one because it, I think, wasn't well enough thought through in terms of how the project would be conducted, who would really be in charge, where it would be held, how it just really would be accomplished. And I'm sorry, there was a third one that we did not accept for funding. The same kind of reason, that is, they wanted a grant of just money to go somewhere, but it wasn't clear what would they do or the purpose of the outing. It was just kind of a trip, and not whether they would spend it on admissions to something, that wasn't clear. There wasn't an itemized budget. Whether they would spend it on money or treats or something for the people. It was all a youth group. But we thought, again, that should be more structured, more focused, more specific on what they would be doing.
Okay. Why did you think this project, How to Be a Man, would be helpful to young men in Southwest?
Well, it did seem like a well-structured grant, a well-written grant. There were matching funds from the organization. That's one thing we require. Even if it's pro bono time, we require some obligation from the grantee. it seems like a good project for Southwest. That is, the participants, we assumed, would be well selected by the organization head and would get training that would be useful that for them in a career, would potentially get references from the people they contacted during this project. So it just seemed like a well-written grant proposal application and well-thought-out project by the organizer.
Thank you so much, Ms. Dr. Coralie Farley.
Okay, you're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Skeeter Black, host of How Radio, How to Be a Man segment. Cal Ramsey will talk with us about his life.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Cal Ramsey. I guess I'll start with my beginning. I was born in Selma, Alabama. I left Selma, Alabama when I was 8 years old. Come to New York, where my mom and grandma took a one-room apartment on Mount Morris Park West. I lived there for about 6 or 7 years and moved to 15 West 123rd Street, right around the corner. I attended junior high school, 120 Cooper Junior High School, and while there, I learned to play basketball and baseball. But I was also one of the best typing student in the school. I received an award for my typing skills, but I learned to play basketball and baseball. From there, I went on to Commerce High School, where I achieved several honors in basketball. I was high school All-American along with Sammy as Will Chamberlain. I was All-City on all major newspaper teams in New York. And upon leaving Commerce High School, I went to New York University. While I was in Commerce, I also got an award for typing, and I typed all of my own term papers. Then I went to New York University. I received a full academic scholarship. I played basketball, and while there, again, I set several records. I set 17 records in basketball. They've all been broken with the exception of my rebounding records, which are 34 in one game against Boston University. Averaged for 3 years, I averaged 19.6 rebounds. No, 1 year, I averaged 19.6. 3 years, I averaged 17.4 rebounds a game. Again, I achieved All-American honors, and I was drafted by the St. Louis Hawks of the NBA. Well, I played very briefly a couple of games, and they released me, and then I was picked up by the New York Knicks. But once again, I played briefly, but not because of my abilities, because at that time there was some kind of a quota system, only so many blacks on each team, and apparently my team had one too many blacks, and I was the one that was released. Then I went and played professionally with the Syracuse Knights, which is now the Philadelphia 76ers. Again, I only played briefly, and I was released. Then I pursued a new career in education because of my typing skills, which I learned in Cooper Junior High School. I became a typing teacher. I needed to take additional credits, graduate credit at NYU, which I did to qualify me for a license in typing, teaching typing. I taught typing for about 6 years in the South Bronx, the junior high school, 52. And while there, I also worked in the after-school center, afternoon and evening centers for 52 for about 6 or 7 years. And then I left there, and I went to the Urban Coalition, where I ran the Street Academies programs for a year for the Urban Coalition. When I left there, I went to the Urban League was Street Academy program. Then I went to the Urban Coalition, ran educational programs. And after that, I became a statistician for Red departure I took, and I'm still there. I'm working in a capacity as a goodwill ambassador for the team. But I worked for 25 years with NYU's development, 20-some-odd years with the Knicks and Community Relations. Again, now I serve as a goodwill ambassador for the team, which means I represent the team at different events. I go out to speak on their behalf. And because of my background in education, in typing, and athletics, I speak to kids on the value of education, athletics, staying in school. Is that enough to start you off with?
Yeah, I need some more. But if you need to take a break and come back, that's fine.
What do you want now? What aspect should I focus on?
How would you do with your students? You know?
Well, I've done several things with my students. I used to be a typing teacher where I taught the basic fundamentals of typing. Now I try to give a message of the value of learning a skill, of getting an education. You know, I believe that, you know, every kid has a skill of some kind or another. And you don't have to necessarily go to college to become wealthy or professional. There are a lot of people who have skills building computers, bridges, refrigerators, whatever. But if you enhance your own personal skills, it would make you, help you have a better life. But some kind of education, I believe, is very important. And my message to kids is that you play hard, but you study hard at whatever your craft might be. And I go around on behalf of New York University and the New York Knicks whenever they need me or call me, at various organizations like the YMCA, the Boys Clubs, those kinds of facilities.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
And I can tell you how I got, those interesting stories, how I got my job as a broadcaster.
Oh my God, I'd love to hear that.
I was a broadcaster for the Knicks for 10 years. I worked 3 years with Bob Wolf, 1 year with Dick Stockton, and 3 with Andy Musser. During that time, I missed one game because of 103 fever. But I got that job because the announcer they had, they wanted to make a change. And I was asked to audition for a radio position. So I went down to NBC Studios to MC for the show. And it was me and a guy named Marv Albert, a very renowned broadcaster, in a studio and a microphone. That was the three of us. And we did an actual game simulation because the Knicks and the Milwaukee Bucks. But there was no game. It was just me and Marv and the microphone. And we went on and did a game. And after they reviewed the tape, they wanted to hire me, not for radio, but they put me on TV. And I stayed there for 10 years. So
I can understand that. You have a radio voice. You know, I picked that up right away. So, you know, if you were to walk in, they grabbed you right away.
Yeah, they did. They did. So I go to, right now, I go to all Knick games. I go to all NYU games. I serve as a mentor to the kids at NYU. I try to find internships and jobs for the kids. I have a small foundation. It's not very much. It's only about $15,000. But what I do is to needy kids. I might give $500 to $1,000 to a kid. Not necessarily an athlete, but a kid who's trying hard and who needs help going back to school. Going to school.
And thank you
anytime,
so much.
Just give me a call.
Okay, thank
Let
you.
Let me know.
Hello, my name is Paul Taylor. Actually, I'm the director of the King Greenleaf Recreation Center. I also run my own nonprofit organization in the Southwest area, which we specialize in addressing youth obesity, gang-related crew, and also healthy eating. I specifically coach basketball at King Greenleaf Recreation Center. I coach ages 7 to 8, 9 to 10, 11 to 12. And what we try to do is help these young men, you know, live healthy lives and also take great pride in their health, their well-being, and respecting their elders. Our basketball program, the 7 and 8-year-olds, were last year's runner-up champions in the DPR Basketball League. Our 11 and 12-year-olds had a fantastic season also. And my main objective is trying to get these young men ready and focused to go to that next level, which is middle school and also hopefully the high school and hopefully the college. Many of these kids, once they leave high school, they're not focused to continue their careers and try to get college degrees. So what we'll be concentrating on is trying to get these kids with sponsors and mentors. Actually, young ladies or men who actually been through college, know what it takes to stay in college, and also maintain at least a C grade point average. So one of my main folks is trying to get volunteers at the rec center so they can help with guide these young men to a prosperous career. You got anything else for Ms. Holland? Oh, yes. DPR actually built a brand new playground facility outside of the King Community Rec Center, which they spent $1.9 million. We have a beautiful water park, which is a lovely attraction. We're actually getting a lot of foot traffic into the rec center, which also helps enhance the programs of the participants that participate in our programs. We have a Young Ladies on the Rise program, which geared towards young ladies between the ages of 6 and 13. As I was speaking to Ms. Sophia Lean Woods, who heads our Young Lady on the Rise program, she has 26 participants, and many of them are brand new participants. Based upon the brand new playground, we get new faces into the rec center, which in turn help with the numbers of new kids that we enroll in our program. Just currently, I started the new Pop Warner football team, which is the Mighty Mites, which is ages 5, 6, and 7-year-olds. And all of the kids that participate in this Pop Warner League, with the majority of the kids, I recruited off the playground. So the playground has been a great recruiting tool for the Parks and Recreation Center at King Greenlee. The parents, the people in the community, they love the playground. It's a great attraction. It actually enhanced the community tenfold. Many of the kids come over early in the morning to get in the spray park because it's so hot outside. So I'm glad DPR was able to give us this playground. The neighborhood, they love it. Every parent that I talk to is talking about this playground. It has been a great tool for the recreation center. We also have a Young Men Future Leaders program where we geared towards youth between the ages of 6.
Hello again, friends. It's amazing how time flies. Now, can you believe that that's the end of our show for today? Well, we hope HAL Radio has brought a ray of sunshine to your day, as well as uplifted your spirits. Be sure to join us again next Wednesday here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember to make us your favorite station. Subscribe to us here and visit us on a website. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/HAL Radio. For even more upliftingly affirmative jewels. Be sure to tell a friend or two that HAL Radio is the place for all things uplifting and positive.